Would you love to taste some raspberry kisses? Coming up next, right here on this special edition of The Right Stuff. Welcome to this special edition of The Right Stuff. I'm the Queen, Parker J. Thank you so much for joining me. Today we are going to be talking to my guest co-host and contributor today, Cecilia Dowdy. She is the author of the book Raspberry Kisses, available on Amazon.com or wherever books are sold. If you love romance with a dash of spice, cinnamon, sugar, and raspberries, this is the book for you, so make sure you go ahead and pick up your copy of Raspberry Kisses today. I am so excited to tell you that the Radio app is now live on Google Play. That's right, the app that I've been telling you all about, where you can upload your Christian fiction and nonfiction to an app solely dedicated to books of the Most High God, is available for you to download onto your phone. I've already uploaded my catalog. What have you done, too? Go ahead, upload your catalog to Radio app today. You can contact me directly on my email or on my Facebook. I'm readily available to help you get your book out there for an app that is going to also pay you royalties or any sales made through the Radio app. RadioApp.com. Find out more information about it today. We want to thank our corporate sponsor, Christian Book Club, for their support. If you want to find out how they can help you build your readership, go to ChristianBookClub.net and find out how they can help you. And lastly, we want to thank our Patreon team for their support. We do showcase Christian authors worldwide and have been doing that now for the past 8 years. It's rather exciting that we get a chance to showcase really interesting and fantastic works of Christian fiction and nonfiction every week so you can just consume it. And our Patreon team makes that possible. So thank you guys so much for your support every month. If you want to weigh in on our conversation, you know you can. All you got to do is call in at 646-668-8485, then press 1 to be live on air, or hit me on Twitter at Parker J. Cole, hashtag right, questions or comments. We're going to go ahead and take a quick short break. We'll be right back after these messages.
Listen to Spurgeon's Morning and Evening Devotionals podcast. Organized by month, this devotional has a morning and evening meditation for every day of the year. Find us at anchor.fm/Russell-Sherard. That's anchor.fm/Russell-Sherard. Also on the Edify app, navigate to player.edify.app. Create an account or log in, search for Spurgeon's Morning and Evening Devotionals podcast, click on the link to listen, then subscribe so you don't miss a single episode.
If you are an author looking to gain visibility for your books, then authorshout.com is the place to go. We have a wide variety of affordable products and services to include a member zone that will help you get the word out about your books. Our team here at authorshout.com specializes in creating stunning digital products to include book banners, teaser videos, book trailers, book covers, and a whole lot more. So what are you waiting for? Stop by authorshout.com today and let our team connect you with a world of new readers.
How do fantasy and sci-fi help make us into better people? And how can Christians best glorify our Lord Jesus Christ as we enjoy these stories? Also, where can you find the best fantastical Christian novels? Yes, they do exist, and we know exactly where to find them.
From the creators of Lorehaven Magazine and from biblical Christian storytellers around the world comes a new podcast for readers of amazing stories. We call it Fantastical Truth.
I'm E. Stephen Burnett.
And I'm Zachary Russell. Our mission is to find biblical truth in fantastic stories. We apply the wonders of these imaginary worlds to the real world our Creator has called us to serve.
Toward that chief end, we will find the best novels by Christian authors, fantasy, science fiction, and beyond. Together, we will explore these stories in light of the gospel, and we'll join these authors and other creative friends on this joyful journey to find the happiness and holiness of Jesus by exploring his gift of truthful imagination.
Please subscribe at lorehaven.com or on podcast players everywhere.
Join us in this eternal quest to seek and find fantastical truth.
Hi, and welcome back to this special edition of The Right Stuff. The Queen is here. Thank you so much for joining me. Today, we're going to be talking to my guest co-host and contributor, Cecilia Dowdy. She is the author of the book, Raspberry Kisses. It's book one of the Bakery Romance series, available at Amazon.com. Now, you can download Raspberry Kisses today for 99 cents. It's already gotten rave reviews, and you want to find out what it's all about, make sure you download your copy today. And without further ado, I'm going to introduce our guest co-host, Cecilia Dowdy. Cecilia, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good.
I am so glad that you are on the show with me today. I cannot tell you, I have been enjoying Raspberry Kisses. I've been reading it today, halfway through the book already, and it reads pretty quickly, so it won't take long to finish, but I definitely love the story. And like I was telling you before the show, who doesn't love baked goods? Who doesn't love sugar and spice, cinnamon and sprinkles and glitter and cupcakes and cakes and all those type of things? And then add a dash of love, a little bit of conflict, you have got Raspberry Kisses. And I'm so excited to delve into this book with you, as well as get to know you as well for our list. So, as always, my first question is, go ahead and tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I'm a writer. I've been writing for about 20, 25 years now. I write in the evenings, and I work as an accountant during the day. I'm married, and I have a 15-year-old son.
Accounting. Oh, my gosh. See, I knew you were logical, because there is a logical method to Raspberry Kisses, because I took accounting, and I'll be honest with you, I was so glad to come up with a C. I was so happy, like, C is passing, okay? But I knew you were logical, because you have a direct way of approaching your topics here. Even the way the characters interact, like some authors would have did the various conflicts in the story a different way, but you came at it directly, and now it makes sense, because it's all about getting to the nitty-gritty of the problem. You're trying to balance the books. You're trying to make sure your debits and credits even out. You're trying to make sure where your cost of goods sold are. You know, you want to get it. You don't have time to do the other stuff, okay? Because there are several times I was like, oh, wow, she just told him the truth. Like, oh, my goodness, that is so different in romance, because usually in romance, they hem and ha. Nope, she told him the truth. Yes, my sister is crazy. I totally admit to that. You're like, oh, wow. She kind of dropped the bag there. So, yeah, you say that your accountant made sense. Now, you say you've been writing for 22 years. How has writing changed for you within that time period?
I've learned a lot about the craft over the years, interacting with other writers and being in different critique groups. It's just, it's all been a learning process for me, learning about the writing itself, as well as about the writing industry in general, and how things have changed within the writing industry has also been interesting over the past few decades. It's just so much has changed with Amazon and just put their books out. Being a writer now, it's a lot easier than it used to be. Not that it's ever easy, but you don't necessarily need a publisher to publish your book, if that makes any sense.
Oh, it does make sense. Back in the day, being a self-published author, people looked down at you and thought, oh, you're self-published.
Correct.
obviously you're not good enough to get a publisher. Now people are like, oh, you have a traditional publisher? How strange. That's the first thing that happens, because Amazon, what we're in now is what I consider the wild west of the ebook publishing. It's starting to actually get more organized now from its early beginnings in the 90s, like late 97, 98, when Amazon came out with Kindle and publishing. And so with that in mind, tell us, you know, when you look back at what you did back then, what you do now, what are some of those differences you see just for yourself as a writer?
Oh, when I first started out, and I said 20, 22 years, it's been, it might even be longer than that, because I'm no spring chicken. So when I first started, I wasn't even hooked up to the internet. I'm just telling a little bit about my age. There was no email. I mean, it was very new. It didn't really come out until I'd been writing like a few years. So I wasn't really connected online with anybody. I did go to writers' conferences, and I did, I was looking for a traditional publisher, and I did find one. I have been traditionally published. You have to go to conferences and like network and talk to a bunch of writers and talk to publishers just to try and land a contract so that you can get a book that's actually in a bookstore. Now it's just like totally different. Now I just get it edited, and I just put it up on Amazon, get a cover made for my cover artist to do a cover, and I just put it up myself. I don't have a vetting process where I have to go to a editor and say, do you like my book? Or send the book in and wait for months and months and months and, you know, getting the rejections in the mail and, you know, having them to pile up and then sending it to different places. It's very time consuming. But now I just put the books out, you know, when I can, without having to go to another person to get it out there. And if you market yourself properly, you can get an audience. You can gain an audience without having a traditional publisher behind you. It can be done. That wasn't possible when I first started writing.
Amazon really changed the landscape when it came into existence. But at the same time, what it did too, because it became easy to publish, what was happening, particularly in the early 2000s, was that a lot of mediocre books were being published by Amazon, and people would buy them because they were cheaper than, let's say, a Stephen King at the time, because at the time they weren't offering, let's say, a Stephen King book for $4.99. They weren't offering that. They wanted at least $10.99 or $12.99, something like that, for an ebook. And so the indie authors were able to compete just based off price point. Then what happened, readers were like, here I am paying money to get your book, and it's not edited well. It's trashy. It doesn't make sense, but I've already paid you. And then they start to really refine the process. And then when the Big Five talked to Amazon, they were able to bring their prices down, and the Big Five started to push the paperbacks. Interesting to see the changes over the last decade or so. And it's constantly changing, too, because Amazon does have to take some responsibility for people who pirate off their site, people who take a book, upload it, and then it's plagiarized from some other place. You know, so it's a lot of wild, wild west here. So it's really interesting to hear your perspective for some of our listeners out there. Because I remember when emails became popular. I'm a little bit younger than you, but I remember, because I was in school. I remember Windows Program Manager. I remember that when the Program Manager came out. And then when Windows came out, it was amazing. They were like, wow, there's Windows. There's the two different Windows, and the whole concept blew people away. And I remember using MS-DOS on my computer. You had to type in all the commands to access the computer.
That.
You had new,
I remember that very well.
Directory, all of that.
Yeah.
So I'm not too much younger than you, but I remember.
Yeah, I remember DOS. I remember DOS, the root, whatever that you just mentioned. I remember all of that.
Yeah.
That was such a long time ago. My goodness.
I know, right? It makes you feel really old. You realize I am getting older, and I had no idea. And I think the hardest part for me recently, Cecilia, and I'm going to be, you know, aging myself here, is that I heard young people say, oh, who's boys to men? And I say, you will not make me feel that old. No, you are not going to make me feel that way. And they said, oh, it's only three boys to men. No, there's four, but one passed away. Oh, I didn't know that. And you're sitting there like, stop. And then what made it worse, Cecilia, my sister showed me the Soul Train Awards recently that happened last year. All of a sudden, I looked at it. It was all the music I grew up listening to. And I said, this is Soul Train, right? She said, yes, it's Soul Train. I said, but this is the music I grew up listening to. She's like, yes, it's Soul Train. It's older music. And I looked at her, and my heart left my chest, flew away out the window. Like, I can't believe the music I listened to is on Soul Train now. And I was just, it just hit me really hard.
Soul Train still came on. It still comes
well,
on.
It wasn't the show. It was just a war ceremony. And they had certain people.
I know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Okay.
You talking about hurting. I was hurting. I said, I can't believe it. So I said, I couldn't believe it. I just couldn't believe it. So, yeah, I totally understand what you mean, how the differences have changed. And my birthday is coming up next month. I'm having a prize for our listeners out there. I'll be telling you about it next week. You'll have an opportunity to win a loaded Kindle as well as a gift card from The Right Stuff. Most of the books that our authors are going to put on the Kindle that you've read on this show, you have an opportunity to get those books. So I'll tell you more about that next week. It'll be a three-week contest that you can be a part of. But I got to ask you this, Cecilia. So in your life as you've gotten better at writing, how did that journey begin for you? You know, particularly since you're coming from, seeing it from being more traditional to being more electronic. Tell us about that journey.
Oh, well, I didn't really, like when I was growing up and everything, it's not like I wanted to be a writer per se. I always liked to read books, and that was just my passion was reading. That's my most favorite thing to do was reading a book. So I remember going to the bookmobile. It would come to my neighborhood. I would go, that's where I would get my books, because I remember when I go to school, you could get two books every week or every 2 weeks from the library, and that wasn't enough for me. I read those too quickly, so I always read a lot of books. After college and everything, and I started working as an accountant, I still continued to read. One day when I was at work, I forgot my book. The book, you know, I'm always reading a book, and there were no e-books back then. I would carry my little book with me on the metro, and so I didn't have my book, so what am I going to do? So, I mean, because what am I going to do for my lunch break? Because I always read during my lunch break. So what I did, yeah, that was the beginning of my writing. I said, well, you know, I don't have my book. I think I'm going to write something. So I took I had a pad of paper and a pen, and I just started writing, and I just kept at it. That's how I started writing a book. And so I would write it. And I started going to the library. I didn't have a computer, so I was writing this longhand. So I would go to the library after work at the library down the street. I'd take the pad of paper with me, and I'd be writing I would write pages. You know, my hand would get all tired. And I remember one time this man came up to me in the library and said, what are you writing? I said, I'm writing a book. So I just started doing that, and then I started researching. I started talking to people because I didn't have there was no internet when I first started doing this. So I talked to some people, and I was able to determine that I needed to join a writer's group, so that's what I did. I joined Romance Writers of America, like I said, decades ago, and that's how I started learning stuff. I would go to their meetings. I joined a local chapter. And I would go to the national conferences, and that's how I basically kind of worked my way into the traditional publishing. And that's how I learned the craft as well. But it's not like it happened overnight. I think it was like maybe five or 6 years that I was writing and submitting and going to conferences and going to like writers' meetings and volunteering at the different events. Before I sold my first book to a publisher, I sold it to it was a book club. It was called Crossings Book Club. I don't know if you've ever heard of like Black Expressions and under the Doubleday Book Club.
Yeah.
Just like people would get So my first book was published. It was a Christian romance. It was under Crossings Book Club and Black Expressions Book Club, and they're all under like the Doubleday Book Club umbrella. So I did that. And then I sold another book a few years after that, I sold it to Harlequin for their Love Inspired line. And then after that, I wasn't able to sell for a while, because just because you sell a book to a publisher, it doesn't mean that everything is smooth sailing and they start buying every book you send to them.
Exactly.
I had a little bit of a dry spell after that. And then I did sell a few books to Barbara Publishing. That's a Christian publisher. They had enough. Mm-hmm. It was like a book club thing. And they also re-released it as a 3-in-1, and it was in bookstores. So that's basically what I did to get published. Then what I did, and I had an agent sometime during all this happening. Then I started learning about indie publishing. I heard people talking about it. I'm like, you can actually make money putting books out yourself. They said, yes, you can really do this. I'm like, I told my agent about it, and she was hesitant. She didn't really want me to do it. It was still very new, but I went ahead, and after researching it, I did it a little bit later than other people that I knew. I went ahead and did it, and I'm glad that I did. It was a learning process, because I had never done it before. I did have a network of people that I reached out to on the internet, and I've been talking to these people. Like, they're like Facebook groups, and we have like writer's loops and everything. I talked to them, and I learned what I needed to do to put my book out there, and that's what I've done. And I've basically publishing since, I think it's 2014, I can't remember, but I think that's when Raspberry Kisses came out. I've been publishing on my own since then. I still, like with the traditional publishers, I don't really work with them much. I have had a couple of historical titles out within the last couple of years. They were part of a novella collection with Barber Publishing, the publisher that I worked with previously. They had a couple of novella collections, and they were historical. They came to me about that. I had never done historicals, so I was hesitant to do them. But they talked me into it. One of the authors said, we should do this. So I'm like, okay. And the publisher wanted me to do it. So I went ahead and did it. And I was glad that I did that, because it gave me a taste of what it would be like to publish something set during a historical period. And I had to get an author's help to do that. I had to have an author who knew a lot about history to help me out, because I just do contemporaries. I don't really like, not that I don't know history, but I don't know it like the back of my hand. Like, I noticed the historical authors know a lot, and not that I'm not open to learning, but it's a lot to write a historical book and for it to be accurate. So I wrote the Underground Railroad Brides collection. I wrote a novella in there. That was a lot. There was a lot of research involved with that. And so I had one of the authors to read it over for me. And, you know, it's probably one of the strongest books I've ever written. And that was eye-opening, writing that. And then I also wrote Courting the Doctor as part of a Teacher's Heart collection, and that just came out like maybe a year ago. That came out during COVID. But I did those, and those were just, like I said, they're novellas, and they're part of a collection with other authors. So that's something I've done, but I don't actively pursue that. I just noticed that I just like doing – I like the freedom of putting the books out myself on Amazon. If that makes any sense.
Well, that's the lure of indie publishing, is the fact that you can create your own schedule when you're ready. I know authors,
yes,
who pull out a book every 2 weeks. I know authors put out a book every week. I know authors put out,
mm-hmm,
a book every month. It doesn't matter. It's on your own schedule. And listening to you, it's really interesting to see how that journey worked for you and see the differences involved, because nowadays a lot of that, I wouldn't knock the older way of doing things, because you did have to interconnect with people. You had to learn people skills and understand that it was all about networking, whereas nowadays it's more of a transactional relationship that develops. So you can't really read the person. You can't really get to know them in a way unless you really make the effort to do that. So I really enjoyed listening to you, especially when you started mentioning like Barbara Publishing, because – and I think I've mentioned this before on the show, I didn't know Christian fiction existed. The only person I knew who did Christian fiction at the time was Janet Oak, and I have read her Love Comes Softly series.
Mm-hmm.
You remember her?
Yes, I do. I know I've read several of her books, and actually, like you mentioned Janet Oak. They really didn't have much Christian fiction. Christian fiction, I still consider it to be new. I mean, new to me as in within the last few decades. That's new because when I first started writing, Christian fiction, there really wasn't that much out there. I'll tell you when people started, the way I see it, and take it for what you want. I feel that Christian fiction started taking off a lot when the Left Behind series came out. You know, Tim LaHaye and Jerry Jenkins, they had the Left Behind series, the apocalyptic stories. Now, those made New York Times best. As far as I know, I believe those made bestseller lists, and they got a lot of readers, and they also made the movies out of them. They made a movie with I think they made one of them was like a made-for-TV movie or something like that with Kirk Cameron. Then they made another one, I think, with Nicolas Cage later on. But what I'm saying is those books, I think, really helped to put Christian fiction on the map as we see it today. And I believe it existed before that with Jeanette Oak and a few others. But I think that made people sit up and notice, hey, wait a minute, these books, there's books are here for, you know, for Christians. We should really, you know, maybe give these books a try. And I think that helped to make people realize that Christian fiction is out there. Now, I have noticed that there are some Christians who don't like fiction because they think it's a lie. I don't know why they feel that way, because Jesus taught in parables, and that's what I tell them if they say something like that.
Go figure.
I don't know if you've ever counted people like that, but some of them don't. They think fiction is a lie. So, if it's a story and you know it's a story, and I'm telling you it's a story, it's not lying. So, some Christians are leery to reading fiction, but I mean, I still don't quite understand if you're going to go to a movie. I mean, is every movie you see true? Usually, it's based on a script, which is not much different than like reading a book. I mean, it's a script, so it's not like it's true. It can be based on a true experience, and I don't know, but I've just noticed that some can be a little bit leery when it comes to fiction for whatever reason. I mean, it's not like I'm interacting with people like this every day, but I have noticed it, you know, in my like things that I attend, I have seen a few skeptical people because it is fiction. And maybe that's why it took a while for Christian fiction to take off. I mean, I don't know.
It's a conundrum, and I actually understand what you mean, because I've met people like that. They feel as if fiction doesn't really serve the kingdom of God. And as a person who caters to Christian creatives and Christian writers, I have to very respectfully disagree with that position, because writing fiction can tell a story, especially when you're in the type of environment where we are in what's called a post-truth society, where they don't really care if it's true or not. I just want to feel good about the choices I make, and I don't want you to tell me that they're wrong or right. And that kind of comes through with your character, Raven. Raven, which is Rhea's sister. We'll talk about that on the other side of the break. But Raven, she doesn't care that it's right or wrong. She wants to do what she wants to do, and she wants to do it her way. And as you were talking about that, I definitely understand where some people may have that feeling of maybe we should not read Christian fiction or fiction at all. So definitely understand that, Cecilia. And for those of you listening in, we are talking to Cecilia Dowdy. She is the author of the book Raspberry Kisses, available on Amazon.com or wherever books are sold. You can go ahead and download your copy today for 99 cents. It's gotten rave reviews. You want to know why? Find out now by downloading your copy. We still have an opportunity to call in and ask the question. All you have to do is call in at 646-668-8485 and press 1 to be live on air, or hit me on Twitter at Parker J. Cole, hashtag right stuff with your questions or comments. We'll be right back after these messages.
Are you an indie author looking to create audiobooks listeners will love? At The Audio Flow, we handle the entire process, from casting the perfect voice to distribution. Contact us today at 317-927-8770. The Audio Flow, a new way to do audio.
God gives humans the gift of making amazing stories to glorify Him. At SpeculativeFaith.com, our ministry is to help fans explore fantasy, science fiction, supernatural stories, and beyond from an intentional and biblical Christian perspective. We share daily articles and have extensive archives tackling hot topics like end times beliefs, the art of writing, creative excellence in the Christian subcultures, discernment, sex, magic, Harry Potter, and space aliens and the Bible. If you are a parent or anyone else with a discriminating palate, our reviewers explore fantastical novels, movies, television, and games in light of God's beauty, goodness, and truth. Want to find Christian stories? The SpecFaith Library lists every fantastical novel we can find from a Christian author. It's all part of our mission to discern, engage, and enjoy fantastical human creativity in honor of our Creator, Jesus Christ. SpeculativeFaith.com, exploring fantastical stories for God's glory. Engaging the culture's imagination through speculative fiction, The Untold Podcast produces audio fiction from a Christian worldview. Find us over at untoldpodcast.com, where we partner with authors to tell science fiction, fantasy, supernatural, and horror stories. Find links at untoldpodcast.com to subscribe via iTunes, Stitcher, and a variety of other platforms. Each month we produce high-quality audio fiction that's free to download and free to listen. Our submissions are open, and we're always looking to add another great story to over 24 hours of narrative entertainment. Find all of our audio fiction over at www.untoldpodcast.com.
Hi, and welcome back to the show. You're listening to a special edition of The Right Stuff here on WPJC 104.5. I am having just a phenomenal time talking to my guest co-host and contributor today, Cecilia Dowdy. She is the author of the book Raspberry Kisses, available on Amazon.com or wherever books are sold. What I really enjoyed about listening to Cecilia is that she can see how the industry has changed from when she first started writing to now, and just see how how technology has really affected the industry. And I'm very excited to have her with me on the show today. Now, in her book, Raspberry Kisses, we have some really interesting dynamic characters. Before I go into that, Cecilia, go ahead and without any spoilers, tell us what Raspberry Kisses is all about.
Oh, Raspberry Kisses is about Rhea, she's a baker. She's got a bakery, and it's failing. And she needs to do something, you know, to make it profitable. So she has an identical twin sister. Her identical twin sister is crazy, literally. So her identical twin sister wants to go to a singles retreat because there's a pastor there to whom she's interested in. So Raven has an accident, and then Rhea agrees to go in Raven's place to make sure that no other women are going to, like, you know, approach this pastor. She wants to, like, make sure the coast is clear for her twin sister. But basically, it's a story about a pastor who's struggling with his past mistakes, and how he's haunted by them, and how he's also trying to help Rhea to make her bakery profitable. And the two of them are dealing with past pains. Rhea is a widow, and she's afraid to love again. And Martin, he's made some mistakes in his past, and they affect the way he views his relationships now, and he doesn't even know if he's worthy of Rhea's love. So the two of them have to work through their past pains in order to attempt to make a future together, if they can, in a nutshell.
Well, yeah, and it's hard to bring a story like Raspberry Kisses in very short words because there's so many threads here that are interwoven within the narrative.
Yes, it's hard to tell about every little thing because there's so much going on.
So let's pick out the parts. I want to pick out the part with Rhea, because Rhea, she's an interesting character because there's an aspect of her, I don't want to say adolescent, but she's needy. And she's needy because she's in pain. You know, her husband passed away. And she's making ends meet. And she's trying to believe. So she's needy. And it may come off to a reader like, oh, she's just too whiny. It's not that she's whiny. And I didn't get that impression. What she needs is help. And she's doing it all on her own. And it's difficult when you're by yourself. Not to mention the circumstances of her being a widow also add to her personality. So in a sense, she's coming out of her shell because she was pretty young when she got married the first time. And I was thinking about that because one of the reviews said, you know, she seems really needy. I said, but that's okay because not everybody's going to be this, oh, I'm a superwoman. And I get really irritated when when Hollywood particularly portrays strong female characters as women who kick people in the face. And I'm like, that's not a strong female character, okay? Strong female characters are vulnerable. They are. They admit mistakes. They may even need help. And when you don't take that, you know, that's what they think we're all Wonder Woman. And I don't. I don't necessarily agree that's always a strong female character. Even like in, and I said this on the show, in Black Panther, the general, you know, she was duty-bound to protect her king. And even when Killmonger became king, she was doing her duty. So the part of her strength as a female character to me was the fact that she did her duty regardless of the circumstances. And it wasn't always about her physical strength. It was her strength of character. So that's what I mean. With Rhea, she's learning to become a stronger woman. And I like how Martin is helping her become that. And then he's learning to be vulnerable with her because he is dealing with the past. And so we're going to do one little spoiler here. It won't be too much of a spoiler, but he's trying to become the lead, the senior pastor or the full pastor at his dad's church. And there is a busy body. There is a busy body there. And I'm going to call, you called her Linda in the book. I called her Mother Tucker because I know this woman. I have seen her in my church many times before. And Mother Tucker, who just came to the church because of scandal at her old church, she is just causing so many problems. When you were creating Mother Tucker, were you pulling that from actual historical events, or was she just a figment of your imagination? You can also plead a fifth if you want to.
I think I don't really know anybody like that, but I could see somebody being like that. I just needed a conflict, and I know that since I wanted him to be the senior pastor, I needed somebody, I needed an external conflict. I needed something or someone to not want him in the pulpit. So I created her for that reason. I wanted her to be like a roadblock, if that makes sense to Martin getting his, you know, fulfilling his dream of being senior pastor. So that's basically where I got her from. I've never really known anybody personally who's like that, but I've heard of other people speaking of others like that, if I'm making any sense.
Oh, for sure. Like I said, I grew up in church all my life. I have seen that.
Yeah, because when I was in, like the church I'm in now, I know people, but not really well. It's not like I'm going to their house and like seeing them every day, or like I don't really know them the way I know, like maybe let's say if I'm working with a coworker and I see them every day and we just talk. I don't think I've ever really had a relationship with someone in the church that's that close. I go to church and I know people, but I don't usually take it to the point where I'm calling them every day or every week all the time to really know them. So there might be people in my church that are like that, and I'm just not aware of it. But I've just heard of this in general, just in church circles and just talking to people, just when the subject comes up, like at a book club or something, talking about church, and I've heard of people like this. But I didn't really base her on a particular person, but I could imagine somebody acting that way and being that way and wanting with her nephew, wanting her nephew to be the pastor. I could see, I could see like a mother wanting that for her son. She didn't have any kids. since her nephew, I could see like a mother wanting that for her son or for another relative or somebody who's really close, wanting him to be in the pulpit, because I know there's like a certain lure to a man who's a preacher. There's a certain lure to some women that they like it. Oh, they like that.
Oh, for sure.
And I noticed,
particularly in the African American community, particularly, the pastor is a very powerful figure in that community. And I remember reading some years ago, I think it was the Essence magazine article. This is years ago, and they was like, "What is it about the pastor that women are just attracted to?" And that's why a lot of churches want the pastors to be married before they even become pastors. Because having a single pastor like Marvin, who is eligible, handsome, is a hard worker, loves the Lord, that is like holding out candy. And for Martin, he doesn't really want that. He's trying to, you know, be obedient to the Lord, but women are coming at him, okay? They're coming at him, not including Rhea's twin sister, Raven. And he's like, I'm just going to try to talk to her, let her know nothing's happening here. But I really like that dynamic because that causes problems for him because he is single. Mm-hmm. And, like, there's one scene in there. I'm not doing a big spoiler, but there's one scene in there where this one lady who really needs to take her medication, she needs to take her meds, she is, like, going at him. He's like, whoa.
Right.
And I've seen that enacted in churches I've grown up with, and you didn't know it at the time because I was too young to notice it because, you know, also my mom would go, come here, go over there somewhere, you know, or something like that. And you never knew what was going on until you got older. You go, what? You know, you're just like all this, you know, church scandals. And, yeah, so I like that dynamic in Martin because he is eligible, but he's not interested in Raven. That's important just from the blurb. He's not interested in Raven, but Raven is very much interested in him. Maria has a very deep sense of loyalty to her twin sister. And myself, being a twin myself, I totally understand that loyalty and that bond and connection. And so Rhea, she's also dealing with being a widow. And she's a very young widow. Not that 40 years old, but she's not like in her 40s. She's a young widow. She's in her 20s.
Right.
And she has this bakery, and it's her pride and joy. It gives her solace. Now that her husband has passed away. Now, one of the scenes here, and I don't think it's a big spoiler, but Martin comes to help her with her bakery because it is failing. And the way he helps her, I thought I was watching an episode of Gordon Ramsay, because Gordon Ramsay, he'll come on and say, you know, change this around. This looks, you know, and she's like, and she's resisting him, that resistance. And I love that aspect. Now, was that inspired by Gordon Ramsay or one of those cooking renovation shows?
I watch Restaurant Impossible. I don't know if you've ever heard of it. It's on Food Network. What's his name? He has an accent. Australian, I think. I don't know where he's from. that's the show basically where I got that from. The Restaurant Impossible show. I'm a fan of that, and I've watched a lot of episodes of that. That's where I got the idea of him like coming in and changing everything and like, you know, suggesting changes and her resisting, because I noticed on that show, whenever Robert Irvine, that's his name, I noticed whenever he comes to the restaurant and starts picking it apart and telling them what's wrong, the owners get defensive. No, that's nothing's wrong with the menu. You know, he'll tell them that they need to change something or that something tastes bad. Well, the rest of the customers like it. And he's like, what customers? You're not making ends meet. Hardly anybody here. And I just noticed that same pattern. And most of the time when he comes, even sometimes they end up crying. I'm talking about those restaurant owners. When he comes in, storming in and demanding change and everything, they don't really want to listen, but yet they've called on him for help because they don't have a clientele. And they don't want to make all of the changes that he suggests. So that was inspired by a cooking related show. And that's basically where I got that from.
But but it mirrors to Rhea's point of view and her mindset, because it's hard for her to move on from her husband who's been dead 2 years. It's hard for her to pull back from her sister who she. It's hard for her to even make hard decisions when it comes to her her employee Candy, who I hope there's a story about Candy actually. It's hard for her to make the decisions, and so here she is in a rut. And what's interesting is that Martin comes along. He says, "I have had a successful business." And when you watch those shows, you do get irritated with the restaurant owners, because you're like, okay, you're about to lose your restaurant. He comes on and says, change this, but you say, that's obviously not the problem. And I remember Gordon Ramsay, who does similar, he said to the one guy, he was like, well, they love our food. He said, clientele don't tell you that they don't like your food. They just don't start coming. And obviously, you and me be on the show if they were here. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I don't know if they have that connection.
Right.
But, yeah, I love that. I love that tension between them two there. And I like the fact that Raspberry Kisses, the title is very evocative. And I thought about raspberries. Mm-hmm. I said this before the show. Raspberries are sweet and tart. And you don't make them with everything. You don't use it for everything. But when you do use it for a unique recipe. And in the book, she's making these raspberry cupcakes, and she likes them, but then he comes in and says, hey, maybe you need to add that, and that irritates her too. She's like, oh my gosh, I like my recipe, and he keeps trying to improve it, but he's trying to improve because he cares. No one who helps you wouldn't try to. People who love you want to help you, and they want to help you get better at it, and it's hard for her to see that. So there's a lot of dynamics going on here in this, and let's talk about Martin as a pastor, because he, even though he's a young man, he seems very dedicated to what he's doing. He has a homeless, Feed the Homeless ministry. He also helped out his church.
He
helped his dad. You know, tell us a little about Martin. Is he based off someone you know, or just the pinnacle of a preacher that you think of?
He's somewhat he's the pinnacle of a preacher, but some of the aspects for him I got from my experiences, like with the homeless ministry. I did a ministry like that in my church, and when I have him out helping the homeless, you know, feeding them, it's based upon what happened when I went into D.C. with the church to feed the homeless. I based it on that a little bit. I'm not sure. I got him from a different how do I say this? I basically thought that he was just a pinnacle of what I portray a preacher to be, basically. And I like to see him serving somebody, and that just seemed to go with what I think of a preacher should have: a giving heart and be kind and loving. And that's basically what I was trying to portray in the creation of his character.
Yeah, servant leadership like Christ is, you know. And I definitely I like that aspect of it too, because he's a kind man, but he is haunted by a past. And I was thinking about when I won't go into detail about his past, but one thing that surprises him is that Mother Tucker finds out information about his past, or she hints at it. And it was interesting because it happened years ago, but he's still being taken to task over it. So I think there's an element of self-forgiveness that you're touching on, too, with Martin. Go ahead and explain that for our listeners there.
Yeah, Martin, without giving a spoiler, I don't have to tell
if
about
you can.
Okay, I'll try. Hey, okay, there was something that he did when he was younger, and he hasn't forgiven himself for it, and it affects his life now. And there's someone in his church that knows about his past, and it's not revealed until later as to how they know, because you as the reader are going to wonder, how does this person even know about this? It doesn't even make any sense. But he's haunted by it, and it affects his actions now. It fills him with self-doubt. I mean, should he even be the leader of his father's church? Is he even the right candidate to serve as the senior pastor of the church, because of what he did when he was younger? He has yet to forgive himself for that. And I think I wrote this book years ago, so I'm just trying to remember. His uncle Jesse talks to him, tries to make him see that what happened in the past is in the past, and he needs to forgive himself for it and move on, because Jesus has forgiven us for our sins. So it's just not good to be haunted by that. You need to move past that and move on. And that's what Martin has a hard time doing. And it's part of his internal conflict, his internal emotional conflict that, you know, throughout the story that, you know, hinders him from, you know, thinking that he's the proper person to take over his father's church. And it still affects him. He's still haunted by it.
Right, and I like that too, because it makes our pastor not invulnerable. And I think sometimes we hold our leaders so high, and then when they fall, sometimes they fall so hard they crash to the ground. Like we've experienced lots of church scandals in the last several years. It's still like they keep turning on news, new church scandal, new pastor fell from grace, new pastor did this, caught. And so we hold our ministers and our people that we hold in respect, we hold them very high, and that's a hard place to be. And the Bible says you shouldn't trust in man, you shouldn't trust in the Lord. And whereas I might give people a break because I don't put anything past anyone, and that's just the cynicism in me. I don't put anything past it. But it's the fact that, you know, it's interesting that unless they keep their eyes on Christ, it's usually a fall. It's not like you walk down. It's a fall because you've been on this pedestal because you fall down. But hopefully, thankfully, the Lord does pick us up again. I love that song by Diana Clark, and we fall down but get up, because he forgives us. That's something that Martin has to deal with. So now we've told you just a little bit about the story. So I want you to read a 2-minute excerpt from us. I don't know if you already had it ready already. Did I not tell you that before? Did I not tell you that? If I didn't tell you that, I'm so sorry. Did I not tell you that?
I don't know. I'm not sure.
I don't know. Okay. If you didn't, that's fine. I'm going to go to break. We're going to go to break real quick so you can find it. And so for those of you listening, we're talking to Cecilia Dowdy. She is the author of Raspberry Kisses, available on Amazon.com or wherever books are sold. It's book one of the Bakery Romance series, which are all available there. It's gotten rave reviews, so go ahead, download your copy today. Available for 99 cents. We're going to go ahead and take a quick short break. We'll be right back after these messages.
Authors, are you looking for a new way to get your book in the hands of new audience of targeted buyers? Then a virtual book tour is for you. Right now, virtual book tours is an excellent opportunity for you to introduce your book and who you are as an author. Launching your book is very important. A virtual book tour will connect you with readers. We at WNL, we specialize in book tours, book blasts, radio tours, cover reveals, and Facebook chat. Promoting and marketing your book is what we do. Online publicity, the exposure and the publicity is what you need. Let us help you reach new readers and a new audience. We take care of everything so you don't have to. We set up the tour for you. We connect you with bloggers to advertise your book by way of interviews, guest posts, and reviews. If you are an author of a newly published book, have an upcoming release, or just want to give a previously published book new life, a virtual book tour is your answer. Check our tours out at www.wnlbooktours.com. Visit me on Facebook. I am the owner, Paulette Harper.
Christian authors and writers, welcome to Readio. Readio app. Developed exclusively for showcasing Christian fiction and nonfiction ebooks and audiobooks. Tired of book sales plummeting due to algorithm-influenced unrelated classifications? Books lost amongst non-Christian content? Readio allows you to reach your target audience, who's eager to devour your Most High God-inspired books in a variety of Christian subgenres. You write in a niche market. Readio solely caters to it. Follow at Readio App today on social media or visit readioapp.com to know when we are accepting author catalog uploads. Readio, the best app for the most high-influence ebooks and audiobooks.
Hi, and welcome back to the show. You're listening to a special edition of The Right Stuff here on WPJC 104.5. I've been talking to my wonderful guest, co-host and contributor today, Cecilia Dowdy. She is the author of the book, Raspberry Kisses. And if you've been following along, we wanted to give her time to get the excerpt together from this book. And so I'm going to have her go ahead, set up the excerpt, then I'm going to mute myself and we're going to listen in to an excerpt from Raz. Go ahead and take it away.
After rushing down the hall, she found Raven lying in the bed, her leg propped up. A bruise marred her brown skin, staining her cheek, and dark circles ringed her eyes. Rhea approached the bed. Gingerly embracing her sister, Raven groaned, "Careful, my ribs are cracked." How wonderful it would be if she could lift away Raven's pain, making her feel better. Lord, help Raven to heal. "Besides, your ribs, are you badly hurt? I broke my leg, too. The doctor said I can't go to work for a few weeks. I won't be able to drive until my leg gets better." Raven's slurred voice made her pause. "Did you get drunk at happy hour?" Raven groaned, glaring at Rhea. "No, the drugs they gave me for my pain are making me feel funny." She pointed to her black leather purse. "Get my purse. I want to talk to you about something." Rhea tensed. Raven's commanding voice grated on her nerves. She wanted to give her a piece of her mind, but her twin was obviously not feeling well. She'd do what she could to make her feel better. Perhaps there was something important in her purse that she needed. Rhea grabbed Raven's handbag and offered it to her. Raven shook her head, wincing. "Just open it and get my phone," she snapped. Leonard's threat hovered in Rhea's mind. She had so much she needed to take care of, and she didn't want to listen to Raven's drama. Huffing, Rhea pulled out the phone, handing it to Raven. Raven touched the screen, showing Rhea a list of sent calls. "This is one I wanted to show you. Remember Martin, the guy I met a while back?" Where were those release forms? The nurse had still not arrived with the release papers, and she wanted to take Raven home. "What about him? I love him." As usual, her sister exaggerated her facts, making her sound delusional. It also didn't help matters that she was drugged, probably clouding her mind even further. "You barely know him." Raven mashed her lips into a hard line, her eyes narrowing, making her notorious mean face. Oh no, now her sister was about to start criticizing, finding fault. Filled with dread, Rhea resisted the urge to tell Raven she sounded ridiculous. "Why are we talking about this?" Rhea threw her hands up into the air, defeated. Where was the nurse with the release papers? Maybe Raven could tell her more about this during the drive home. "Look at this." She handed Rhea the phone. Rhea accepted it, staring at the image. "That's Martin. Isn't he gorgeous? Like a male model. His dark brown eyes sparkled with warmth, and his chocolate brown skin and amazing smile filled her with a feeling of deja vu. Where had she seen him before? "What's the matter? You don't think he's cute?" Rhea bristled at Raven's irritated tone. "Of course he's cute. Why are you upset?" "I'm not upset. When I showed you his picture, you didn't say anything. You need to chill. I've got a lot on my mind. I don't feel like talking about Martin right now." She tossed the phone onto the bed, and Raven picked it up. Dropping her phone onto the blanket, she gestured toward her busted leg. "This happened at the worst time. Tomorrow is the Christian singles retreat, and Martin is supposed to be there. Last time we spoke, he said we'd spend some time together during the retreat." "You're going to a Christian singles retreat?" As far as she knew, Raven had not been to church in years, and she always said negative things about organized religion.
Let me stop you there, Cecilia. Cecilia, let me stop you there because we're getting close to the end of the show, but you can definitely see, just based off our conversation to our listeners, where this is going. That's why I'm encouraging you right now to pick up your copy of Raspberry Kisses on Amazon.com. Now, Cecilia, I have just had a wonderful time talking with you. In the few moments we have left, I would love to have readers who want to get in contact with you. Where can they find you online?
Oh, yes. My website is my name, Cecilia Dowdy, CECELIADOWDY.com. And I'm on Twitter at CDNovelist. And also I'm on Facebook as Cecilia Dowdy, Christian Fiction Author. Just put it in Facebook and you'll find me. I have a Facebook page devoted to this. And you could also email me at DowdyWriter@AOL.com.
Cecilia, in the few moments we have left, I want you to encourage our aspiring authors out there that if God has given them the gift to write, to pick up the pen and do so.
Pick up the pen and do so. If you want to write, just write. Make time every day to sit down and write your thoughts down or write down whatever it is you're working on. Don't abandon it. Keep at it.
Cecilia, thank you so much for taking time out of your schedule to be with me today, and I cannot wait to have you back and have you back real soon.
Thank you, and I enjoyed this. Thank you. I appreciate the time and effort you've taken to talk to me.
And we were talking today to Cecilia Dowdy. She is the author of the book Raspberry Kisses, available on Amazon.com or wherever books are sold. So make sure you go ahead and pick up your copy today. What I really enjoyed about talking to Cecilia today was the fact that she comes from seeing how the industry used to be to how it's evolving now. And for those of you who constantly say, I want to write a book, it really has never been easier. You didn't have to go through the leaps and bounds that Cecilia had to go through, and now she's made her niche doing it what she's doing right now. So there really is no excuse why you just can't pick up the pen and write stuff. Thank you so much for joining for this special edition of The Right Stuff. I'm the Queen, Parker J, and you have a wonderful, absolutely glorious, blessed day.